Money don't define the man.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. We're going to be looking back at Sunday's games across the NBA, previewing Monday's nine games, looking at injury news that has occurred over the last couple of days, and previewing week six in the NBA schedule. Michael Bolton, he is super keen to get stuck into it.
Let's get to it.
Oh, that is a fantastic idea. We will start, of course, with...
Monstrous line of the night.
Yes, the monstrous line of the night. It does go to the one and only...
LeBron James.
Yes, LeBron James of the Los Angeles Lakers becomes, I think, the sixth player this season to have a 50-point performance. 51 points with six triples, eight rebounds, three assists, two steals, and one block for LeBron playing back against the Miami Heat back in Miami. A fantastic performance from LeBron. The assists are still pretty low for him this season, only 6.9 per game, down from 9.1 last season. But everything else is pretty similar to what we've expected from LeBron. I guess you could say that the 33% increase in his three-pointers made up from 1.8 to 2.4 is a little bit of a surprise. And across his last six games, he is hitting almost four triples per game at an insane 52% clip. So, of course, that number is going to come down as he moves forward during this season. He's arguably the greatest player of all time. He is not arguably a 52% three-point shooter. So that is going to come down from LeBron. He finds himself as the fourth-ranked player moving forward, or as he currently is this season. Some really, really strong numbers from LeBron without those assists being there. So super performance from him to nab himself his second monstrous line of the night in about the last 3 or 4 days.
Waiver wire line of the night.
The waiver wire line of the night goes to Kelly Oubre Jr. of the Washington Wizards. The Wizards were disgusting again. They got smacked by the Blazers. Ended up only being a 10-point margin, but it was 30 points with about 2 minutes left in the third quarter. And then Oubre and Tomas Satoransky, who we'll get to really shortly, were the only two Wizards players who were able to get them back into it. 29 minutes in this game for Oubre. 19 points with 4 rebounds and 4 assists. He had two threes. He had a steal. He had 2 blocks, and he was really efficient, going 7 of 14 from the field as well. Oubre has played 26 minutes per game this season, down from last season. The addition of Austin Rivers and Jeff Green,
my name is Jeff,
has limited a potential growth season for Oubre, averaging 12.5 points with 4.5 rebounds. But one of the reasons he does get held back in fantasy numbers is just the lack of those peripheral stats. So less than one assist, 0.8 steals. The 0.7 blocks are nice. That is almost double where he was last season. And then poor efficiency, 42% from the field and 28% from three after being a 34% three-point shooter last season. So while he has outplayed Otto Porter at times this season, and let's be honest, he's outplayed Austin Rivers in pretty much every game, Scott Brooks is more and more every game, displaying himself as a suboptimal coach. I'm not looking at adding Oubre really in 10s or 12s or probably even 14 team leagues, although he's okay in that sort of an area. He's more of a 16 team staple and a 14 team league maybe sort of a guy. I'm just not sure that he's got enough in the other peripheral areas to be considered a must roster type of a player just at this point in his career. We've still got a little bit of time to go, I think, before that becomes more of a reality for Oubre, if he ever gets there, which I'm not super high on him ever reaching those sorts of heights. Make sure you guys are checking out the Locked On Podcast Network Twitter and Instagram feeds. It's simple. It's Locked On NBA Net. All the hosts on Twitter into one feed, get all the news right across the league. And then on Instagram, check out our stories, which digest the biggest news of the day into 1 minute Instagram stories. Locked On NBA Net on both of those social media accounts. Let's move into the deep league player of the night, and it is Oubre's teammate. The only other Wizard player who showed too much fight at all was Tomas Satoransky. Of those Washington Wizards, only 19 minutes for Satoransky, 10-2-7 in that time with a steal, and his legendary efficiency was on display again. 4 of 5 shooting. We saw this guy take over from John Wall when he was injured last season, be a standard league fantasy staple player, be a highly effective NBA player, and then Scott Brooks decided to replace him with Ty Lawson at the end of last season, and this season replace him with Austin Rivers. Not everybody, because not everybody knows what they're talking about, but nearly everybody knows that Satoransky is a superior player to Ty Lawson and to Austin Rivers. It shouldn't be any debate about this discussion whatsoever, but Brooks can't see it. I don't know why we're seeing only 12 minutes per game from Satoransky this season. He's still shooting 42% on his threes. He was at 47 last season. He is still generating, you know, over almost 7 assists per 36 minutes, despite not playing as much of a point guard role as what he did last season. It's going to take a lot for him to jump back into standard league consideration. In fact, it's going to take a trade for that to happen, because Brooks is never going to recognize him, and he's not going to start over John Wall, of course. But the way that he is misused by Brooks, I think says more about Brooks than it does about Satoransky. But his roster percentage is at 0% on Yahoo, Thomas, and he has jumped inside the top 150 over the last 4 games at only 15 minutes per night. So I'm looking at him in 20-team formats. This strong run of play, I guess some of that's fueled by some really high shooting percentages, is intriguing, but he's far from a must roster guy, but he's always a name to watch. If he gets included in any sort of a deal where he moves, now he would be the best point guard on the San Antonio Spurs without any problem. He'd probably be challenging for the best point guard on the Bulls, and there are many teams around the NBA where he could be in that sort of discussion, the New York Knicks, for example, as well. So if any sort of deal with Satoransky does occur, he'd be a name to watch. And even if he got a 20-minute roll, 24-minute roll off the bench, backing up the 1, 2, and the 3, which he's capable of doing, he could force his way into 16-team discussions. But we're not at that spot yet with Thomas. And in Washington, I think we're a fair way away from that occurring.
Young gun of the night.
It goes to my mate John Isaac of those Orlando Magic. This sort of performance is why you roster Isaac. 24 minutes off the bench behind Wesawundu. You'd have to think that I won't be saying that sentence too much more this season, the phrase there behind Wesawundu. But it doesn't really matter, as usual, whether someone's coming off the bench or starting, assuming that they get their numbers. Now, in his game on the weekend, on Saturday, he had 5 blocks. Today, he played 24 minutes and had 16 points. He had 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 1 block. And this is why we like him as a fantasy guy. Since he returned from his injury, he's the 70th ranked player in only 19 minutes, averaging 9 and 5 with those blocks, with those steals. Now, there are a couple of things there that are going to come down, the block numbers and the field goal percentage in that time as well. But the minutes are going to rise, and he, to me, is a pretty clear-cut top 100 player, and that makes him a must-roster 12-team league guy and probably a 10-team league guy as well. Now, the ankle injuries are a pain in the ass. We're all aware of those. He is wearing some different braces on his ankles now, so hopefully that can keep him out of trouble there. But that ability to be a triple one, or honestly a triple one and a half sort of a player, along with decent enough rebounding and hopefully an increase in scoring, gives you a tremendous amount of appeal. And I think he will be a top 50 guy, not this season, but pushing forward into the next 2 to 3 years. He is going to be really good. I'm really excited to see where he can bring his performances. But he is on your waiver wire in a lot of formats, only 58% rostered in Yahoo. So go and have a look. And if John Isaac is around, go and make that move, depending on who you are. If your team is super ridiculously strong and you've got 13 top 70 guys, then you probably don't want to go and drop any of them for Isaac. But if you've got a couple of guys floating around at the back end of your bench, make a move, go grab Johnny, and see how this pans out. But I'm pretty confident in him having a strong run to end the season. I tell a man's not hot. Yes, the dud of the night. It welcomes back an old friend, Andrew Wiggins of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And this is a little unfair on a 5-game slate, because his line wasn't terrible, 14-2-4. The percentages weren't great, 1 of 2 from the line and 6 of 18 from the field. He'd put together 2 really strong performances since General Saunders had left Minnesota. And I thought, is he turning the page? Is he getting all these other peripheral numbers coming in? And maybe he still is, because he is still a top 75 player this season. And over the last 6 games, he's a top 70 player, averaging 17.5, 5 and 4 with a block and with 1.7 steals, despite shooting poorly. So I think there's still significant room for Wiggins to improve on what he's done already, because he's only shooting 40% from the field and he's still a top 75 guy. That can improve. He's got his free throws semi back under control, though the last 6 games he's struggled reliable there, but 75% on the season. He's generating steals at a high rate. His assists are up from, his assists are at a career high number as well. And over the last six games, he's at 3.7 assists, one block, and 1.7 steals. Really, really strong numbers in that time. So there's no way that Wiggins is sitting on any waiver wires, I wouldn't have thought at this stage. But I do have a decent level of confidence that Wiggins can, you know, put together his best fantasy season with the general out of town. But some of these duds will occur. He's not going to be this consistent multi-categorical producer. But this is the sort of guy, maybe not today, but in these last couple of games that we thought could push to be a top 50 player just a couple of seasons ago. So positive signs from Wiggins. Not all that positive today, although still in a not great performance, adding four assists is far from the worst thing that you can get out of your guy who you got really, really late in a fantasy draft. If your company is looking for a new way to reach customers, you know that you can advertise on this show, and it's a great way of getting your product out there. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on their favorite podcasts and this podcast. Our demographic is 98% male, higher educated and higher earning than your traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor this podcast by emailing me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Let's go into the plus-minus goats of the day. Wes Iwundu with a +123.3. I don't think we need to read too much into that. While the worst plus or the worst net rating goes to Damo Lee of the Golden State Warriors, who was a -113.3. Coach Steve.
You can call me Coach Steve.
With some of his curious rotation decisions, as well as the Warriors lost their third consecutive game. Iwundu is taking some steps forward, but he's very far from being a consistent fantasy contributor. I'm pretty sure we're all aware of that. The two big injury news things we need to talk about is Victor Oladipo, who had a knee issue, lasted 4 minutes on his game on Saturday, then had to exit the game. With him out, Aaron Holiday stepped up, Corey Joseph stepped up, Tyreke Evans got a little bit of extra playing time. Out of those players in 12-team leagues, Evans is the guy you go and scoop, but still, he still only played like 23 or 24 minutes in that game that Oladipo was out, and McMillan has a real issue with what Tyreke does. That seems pretty clear, but in deeper leagues, you can look at as Holiday 20-team leagues if Oladipo remains out, and fingers crossed, if you do have Oladipo on your team, that this isn't too serious of an issue. But he did miss some time with knee problems last season and has now missed basically this game, and we'll see how that moves forward. The injury out of today, Dwight Howard had gluteal soreness, so his ass was back being a pain. That's what caused him to miss the beginning of this season. You still hold on to Dwight, of course, but if he misses, it bumps the value of Jeff Green and Markieff Morris and Yan Mihimi, or maybe even Jason Smith, or hopefully Thomas Bryant. But these are all deeper league type situations. Green and Morris are on the fringe of 12-team formats, but we don't think there's anything really severe here with Howard. He is still pretty clearly in pain from this injury, and it doesn't appear that this pain is going away anytime soon, so I imagine there'll be a few of these games throughout the season as he tries to battle this problem, and that could be a concern for his long-term or value in his longevity with this Wizards team. So that is something to bear in mind, but you just hold for now until we hear any future info on Dwight Howard and his ass. There we go. Let's move on to talk about these games now. There were the five of them on Sunday, so let's get into... Oh, that's the wrong button. Apologies for that. For those of you watching there on the old YouTube, just saw my big head appear. Let's get into this first game. It is the Memphis Grizzlies and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The first question people will want to know is, Jermichael Green's back. Is this the end of Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr.? And my initial statement is absolutely not. Now, Jackson only played 19 minutes in this game, 13 points with 3 blocks. He picked up his second foul right at the start of the second quarter, and that did limit him somewhat, but only ended with 3 fouls. It's curious coaching from JB Bickerstaff. Now, it's not like that Green came in and played all of those minutes that Jackson wasn't there, because Jermichael only played 21 minutes. He had 8 and 8 in that time, Green, and Jackson was still productive, 13 and 2 with 3 blocks and a 3. But Jackson's net rating was very, very poor in this game, and I think that the fact that he was struggling on court to begin this game, yeah, played a significant role in those minutes being reduced. So if someone panic drops him, absolutely, you go and add him under every single circumstance. He has top 50 potential this season. So if anyone panics, and that, you know, I got tweeted that a million times today. Well, not a million, that's a marginal exaggeration. But Jermichael's back to timeshare. Is this it for Jackson? And thankfully, the people that follow me, because you were all super smart, you didn't drop him. you ask the question, is this the end? But you hold, but someone will drop him. I 100% guarantee you that multiple people listening to this podcast will see Jaren Jackson, if they don't already have him on their team, appear on their waiver wire because someone will panic. Oh, Green's back. It's it. It's over. I am not ready to do that. If I see 18 minutes a night for the next three games, then I would start to get worried. But even then, eventually, most times, the better players win out. And we've seen this through many, many teams this season. Coaches start the year with nonsense rotations, and in the end, the better players, the cream rises to the top, and the common sense occurs. We've already seen this in Memphis with Kyle Anderson barely playing, and now he's getting a consistent 30 minutes a night, and he's a key part of what they're doing. And I think the same will be the case with Jackson, so I'm not panicking. Marc Gasol, 26-13, 2 steals and 3 blocks, marginally just missed the monstrous line of the night, while Conley had 18 and 8 assists. These two guys have been absolute bargain draft picks and they're really killing it. While Anderson, the aforementioned Kyle Anderson, only 4 points. You're not getting any scoring from this bloke. But 3 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, 1 block. The perfect type of rotisserie guy, the perfect type of punt points fantasy player. He is back on track and he is a must roster 12-team league guy. 28 minutes again for Shelvin Mack. 12 points with 2 assists. The efficiency is off the charts for Mack. He has value now. I'm not sure how long it's going to last, but interesting that he just continues to get these minutes. And with Jermichael Green back, and Jermichael is a 14 to 16 team league guy, 16 probably. Even, look, if he gets 30 minutes a night, he's not a 12 team league guy, so he's probably more of a 16 team league guy. But with him back, it reduced Wayne Seldon's playing time. It reduced Marshawn Brooks' playing time as well. For the Wolves, 3 games since the arrival of Covington and Šarić, and in the 3 games, Taj Gibson's minutes have gone 27, 24, and down to 19 minutes in this one. Šarić is up to 29 in this one, 14 and 3 with 4 triples. Now, that's borderline 12 team for Šarić, and if this trend continues and he overtakes Tom Thibodeau's boyfriend, Taj Gibson, that's saying quite a bit about the talent discrepancy between these guys. And whether Thibodeau makes the change to put Šarić starting or not, it doesn't matter. If he plays 31 and Taj plays 18, which is just completely antithetical from what Thibodeau believes in, but we've seen that trending that direction. So Šarić could be a solid ad. Now, I'd put him way behind Jaren Jackson. I'd put him behind John Isaac if I'm making ads off the wire, but it's moving in that direction. As for Taj, you know what to do in 10s and 12s and probably 14 team leagues. He had 5 and 4 in his 19 minutes.
My name is Jeff.
Jeff Teague, woof. 1 of 9 for 2 points in his 29 minutes. Still had 4 rebounds and 4 assists with 1 steal in this game. It wasn't great, but we don't need to panic. While Derrick Rose, the shooting continues, 55% from the field, 18 points with 3 assists and a steal. It is going to cool off at some point. The assists are starting to come back to earth for Rose as well. While you have to be absolutely frothing over what Bob Cove is doing, 37 minutes, 15 points, 4 threes, 4 steals and a block. People panic about guys going to Minnesota. Oh, what's going to happen? Yeah, he's going to have to share usage with Wiggins. And it doesn't matter for these guys. And this would have been the same with Joshie Richardson, because they're going to play 37, 38 minutes and the numbers are going to come. And Covington is fitting in perfectly over in Minnesota. Let's go on to the next game that we've got on deck here. It is the Portland Trailblazers and the Wizards. Lillard had 40. Great game from him. McCollum had 25 as they smashed the Wizards. And Nurkic, 8 assists. What? 13 and 14 for Nurk with a block and those 8 assists. His free throws, like DeAndre Jordan's, I'm calling it now, they're real. We are almost 20 games into the season and he's shooting high 70s from the line. They're real. This is it. He's improved. I'm happy to go with it. I could look dumb later saying it, but I think this is a time where we have to make that decision, and I think that his free throws are real. Zachy Collins fouled out in only 13 minutes, while the chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I think it was last week I talked about how he'd put together a week of top 70 value, and he was destined to fall off. His last two games have been absolute turd burgers. 9 points with 8 rebounds in 2 triples, and this just illustrates, he played 36 minutes as well, this just illustrates why he is just such a fringe 12 team league player. Evan Turner, the 6 assists and 8 rebounds is nice. He is a stream value guy. While Harkless is out, that's just about it for him. And onto the Wizards, Beal and Wall, a stinker from Beal, really, 12 points, while Wall had 24 with 3 blocks, but this team is disgustingly bad at the moment. Otto Porter had 13 points in 28 minutes, so that's a step forward. But I feel pretty confident in saying he will not be the same guy that he has been the last two seasons, and Brooks seems completely out. Jeff Green, 7 points with 13 boards in 25 minutes, 16 team value, while Markieff Morris was really, really poor. Foul trouble limited him to 19 minutes, but so did the fact that he's shit. 3 points and three rebounds in those 19 minutes for Markieff, and he is not, and I'm sure you're all aware of this, he is not a 12-team league guy at this point in his career or this point in the season. The New York Knicks and the Orlando Magic, the Magic win 131-117. Hold on to yourselves, but you're going to be shocked. The Knicks made a change to their starting lineup at halftime. Everything Fizdale says is bullshit. Oh, we're going to give consistency to these guys, let them develop, see the young guys in there. Second half, Vonleh and Kanter started over Alonzo Trier and Mitchell Robinson. Yeah, Kevin Knox, you move him to the four, you move him to the three, he's all over the place. Fizdale is absolutely all over the place with everything he does. There is no consistency, and I will continue to maintain this. Fizdale is not a good coach, and this Knicks team is horrible. But big game from Timmy Hardaway, 32 points with three steals. Massive game from Enes Kanter, 21-19 in 38 minutes. That is a huge amount of playing time for Kanter. Now, that was helped by the fact that Robinson played only 9 minutes, and he played only 9 minutes because he did have five fouls. He's a real specialist, Robinson. He's a field goal percentage and blocks type of a guy. If that doesn't suit you, then just move on. I still think you're going to have value in that area because last game he played 24 minutes and he could play 30 minutes in the next game. There is zero consistency in any decision-making that Fizdale does or Fizdale makes, and it makes it hard for us. The Fort, Kevin Knox, he is just not good, and I think everybody should be well aware of that fact now. Not saying he'll never become good. Hey, Josh, 19, he's a rookie. I know, and he is not good at the moment, and this is not to say he won't become good, but he is literally not good at this point. 4 points with two rebounds in 23 minutes. He will get shots up, and he did here, 8 of them, hit 2 of them, and he does nothing in those other areas. So he is a real luxury to be holding in 12-team formats. He's more of a 14-16-team league guy. And in all fairness to him, he's not being helped by being dicked around, you know, off the bench starting, small forward, power forward, moving all over the place and playing with this dysfunctional franchise. Manny Moutier started, had 12 points in 23 minutes, but it was Trey Burke who had the big game, 2 games in a row, 31 points for Burke in 29 minutes, on 55% shooting, which included 77% from two-point land. Now, this is exactly what Burke did last season, was unsustainably hot from two, and it boosted his value. And I get the feeling that we're going to see the same thing happen here. I'm not rushing to grab Burke in 12-team leagues. Of course, Ntilikina and Moutier aren't 12-team league guys. But Burke has shown a little bit here, so that means that Fizdale will ride with him for 3 games until he misses his shot, and then he'll bench him again. So if you want maybe a quick boost in scoring, maybe you could look to Trey Burke, but I wouldn't be super excited in what he can bring, because there is a significant level of unsustainability in what he is currently doing. There's a lot of weirdness. Alonzo Trier, better than Luka Doncic. 13 minutes for Trier, 7 points. Didn't start the second half. He's all over the place as well. He is more of a 16-team league player than anything else. On to the Magic. Vooch continues to crush it. 28, 10, and 9. What? This guy is unbelievable this year. 2 blocks for him, and that is rendering Mohamed Bamba
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, pretty much useless. I think you could be looking at Bamba and Robinson as comparables in terms of their 12-team fantasy vote, except I feel more confident about Rit Robinson getting minutes, and that says a lot. Evan Fournier had 19, while Aaron Gordon had 20 points in the first quarter and then 11 for the rest of the game in a relatively empty line that was fueled by some unsustainably hot shooting. Another strong DJ Augustine game, 12 points with 7 assists. That has value in 12-team leagues. Only took 4 shots, hit 3 of them, but those assists are really nice. He's clearly just a back-end guy, while Isaiah Briscoe took over that backup role from Jaren Grant. Grant had 3 fouls in 4 minutes. I think that's a part of it, and Briscoe's not really going to be troubling the scorers too much. Terry Ross, the shots finally stopped falling, 10 points on 13 shots. He still hit 2 threes and he still can have some use, but I think at some point, if you've got him and Isaac or Jackson are available on the wire, that switch is a pretty common sense, easy one in my mind. The next game we look at, the LA Lakers and the Miami Heat. This was a pretty comfortable victory for the Lakers. LeBron James, we talked about him already. Lonzo Ball struggled, 2 points, 6 rebounds and 7 assists, and didn't close out the game. I am still holding on to Lonzo with Rondo out. I feel like he is being a little bit misused as well in terms of how Walton's handling that situation. It's not a great scenario for him missing all of preseason and then being put with some of these players that don't fit with what he can do. I am still holding, and I would happily grab Lonzo off the waiver wire. As for the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, I think he's starting to not get exposed is a little bit harsh, but this is who he is, a guy that can score and do very little else, and we're seeing that from him at the moment. 15 points with 1 rebound, 1 assist and a steal was efficient, but has really dropped off. He is outside the top 140 over his last six games. And while I don't think we're at that stage where we have to look at him as a droppable player in 12, I think we're droppable for him in 10-team leagues. I think for 12-team leagues, we're not there yet. But the trend and the direction this is going for the future MVP is it's not looking great at this stage. And I think you've got to be... you've got to be on the lookout for him potentially falling right off the standard league radar because he just isn't that good of a fantasy option. Brandon Ingram, 13-7, he's not droppable, but man, he could get close to that as well. While JaVale McGee, Tyson Chandler is eating into these minutes. A split right down the middle, 6-3 for McGee with two steals, while Chandler had 2-11. I am still holding on to McGee, but that value, that top 40 type value he was putting up to begin the season, I don't think we're seeing that again. Josh the Hitman Hart played 29 minutes. Surely nobody is still rostering him in 12-team leagues. He can go. Well, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had a strong performance. 19 points with 3 triples. Took a lot of shots, so it wasn't a red-hot shooting night, 36% only. Taking some of those Rondo minutes, maybe just a 3-point streamer in 12 and 14-team leagues. For the Heat, Joshie Richardson only played 25 minutes because he got ejected for throwing his shoe into the crowd. So shout out to you, Josh. 17-6-3 with a steal and a block. The Duke Wayne Ellington knocked in 5 triples for 19 points and played 38 minutes. But when the iron shoulder Goran Dragic is back, when Dwayne Wade is back, I just don't see Ellington being useful enough, even with his high efficiency threes. Tyler Johnson was great also, but of course that is the benefit of not having Wade and Dragic there too, 17-6. Scooter Magruder, 14-7-4. That's strong. 12-team value. I think that that's going to fall away as well when these other guys get back. Now, Jim Johnson, did he make us proud? Jim Johnson back for his first game of the season, played 15 minutes and had 5 fouls. He had 8 points, he had 2 assists. I don't think he's going to get enough minutes to be a standard league guy, but what I think he's going to do is he's going to hurt Justice Winslow, who played only 25 minutes here. He's going to hurt Kelly Olynyk, who played only 8 minutes. And remember, we have to reintegrate Wade and Dragic into the rotation. There are two guys who are going to miss out. Obviously, one of them is going to be Derek Jones. I think another one's going to be Olynyk, to be honest. He struggled here, and it's going to be a real mess in terms of how this rotation looks in Miami for the remainder of this season. Not a great Whiteside night. Still had 3 blocks, 6 points and 7 rebounds, but it clearly wasn't his best performance. The last game of the night was the Golden State Warriors losing their third consecutive game, 92-104 against the San Antonio Spurs. Durant had 26-10-6, that's solid, while Quinn Cook came off the bench, but showed that he shouldn't be coming off the bench. 29 minutes, 16-8. As long as Curry is out, Cook has value, but that value is going to disappear pretty quickly. Yunus Jarepko started in place of Draymond, had 8-10 in 26 minutes. As long as Green is out, you can have that 14-16 team league value for your Repco. And Kevon Looney started once again over Damo Jones. 19 minutes for Looney, 6-7, 23 minutes for Jones with 2 blocks. Of course, none of these guys have any sort of fantasy appeal outside of 16 or 18 team leagues. Iguodala started at point guard. Literally nothing changes with his value. 4 points, 3 assists, and 2 steals. Some really, really curious coaching decisions from Steve Kerr.
You can call me Coach Steve.
Just, yeah, poor decision-making. I think a lot of the time, and it's hard to criticize a bloke who's won 3 titles in 4 years, but some of his coaching decisions and rotation decisions are questionable at best, especially at the moment. Jordy Bell, just the 6 minutes. I don't understand what's happening with Jordan Bell at all. On to the Spurs. Derek White to the bench, replaced by a guy who is not a point guard, and that is Bryn Forbes. 25 minutes for Forbesy, 10 points with 2 triples. Forbes is not a 12-team league player. He is barely a 14-team league player. Now, I don't know whether this was just a matchup thing with the Warriors, but White struggled in the last game. Remember, the 3 games before that, he played pretty well. So I will hold Derek White for one more game, and unless there's a hot guy out there, not that hot, you know what I mean, if like Johnny Isaac, make that switch, no problem. Although Isaac's a pretty attractive bloke, I would make that switch of White for Isaac. But in general, I'm not, oh man, is White a drop? Cool, I'm just dropping him. Like, I'm not just dropping him for the sake of dropping him so I can add one game of Quinn Cook or something along those lines. Like, I will just wait and see what this actually means. I don't understand why we need 28 minutes of Dante Cunningham at any point in the NBA ever again, but Popovich seems to enjoy that. And Rudy Gay moved into the starting lineup. 19 points, 5 rebounds, and 3 blocks. If Gay is on your wire, go and add him. That's a pretty common sense move. He's been pretty solid this season when he hasn't been dealing with a heel issue. LaMarcus Aldridge, finally the shots went down. 24 and 18 with 2 blocks on 63% shooting. While DeMar DeRozan playing alongside Forbes, the assists go back up. 26 and 9 dimes for DeRozan, although weirdly, not all that successful from the free throw line. But I think the Derek White change was the big issue. I didn't like the move from Popovich. They got the win, so it's very hard to argue. We'll see what happens moving forward. But I'd like to give it at least a game or two to see how this new rotation develops with this San Antonio Spurs squad. All right. Let's now look at week 6 in the NBA schedule, starting by looking at the team with the best and the worst schedule. The Toronto Raptors narrowly edge out the Boston Celtics for having the best schedule this week. The Raptors play 4 games, which includes 2 quality games. They have the Orlando Magic and the Atlanta Hawks on a Tuesday, Wednesday back-to-back. Unfortunately, that means Kawhi Leonard's likely to miss one of those games. Then they have the Wizards on Friday and the Heat on Sunday. So in terms of ease of matchup plus the 4 games, the Raptors have your best schedule for the week. So guys like Siakam and Dan Green and Jonas Valanciunas and even Freddie VanVleet, they could be in your weekly lineup based on the ease of this schedule for them. The worst schedule for the week goes to the Dallas Mavericks. They play the 3 games. They have the Memphis Grizzlies, the Brooklyn Nets, and the Boston Celtics. The Grizzlies and the Celtics in particular, quite tough teams to accumulate fantasy stats against. And the Brooklyn Nets have been pretty solid in that regard this season as well. The 3 games for them, not ideal for Dallas as they sit there with the worst schedule for this for this upcoming week. So let's have a look at this schedule in a little bit more detail. There are 20 teams this week with 4 games, and 10 teams with 3 games. So no 5-game weeks, no 2-game weeks, a lot of 4-game weeks. And it's a weird week, of course, the week of Thanksgiving. And I'm sure somebody's going to ask me that this year. No, we do not have Thanksgiving here in Australia, but happy Thanksgiving to all you guys who are celebrating. Happy travels back to your hometowns, as you guys like to do at Thanksgiving. But no, we don't have it here. So the weekly spread of games, we've got 9 games Monday, 4 games Tuesday, and then a weird stretch. 13 games Wednesday, 0 games on Thursday, 14 games on Friday, 7 on Saturday, and 8 on Sunday. So our streaming days are Tuesday, Saturday, and Sunday. Of course, adding someone on Wednesday or adding someone on Friday, you're probably not going to be able to use those with 26 teams playing Wednesday and 28 teams playing on Friday. Pretty tough to use someone there. The only team with that Saturday, Sunday back-to-back is the Sacramento Kings. So someone like Marvin Bagley would be an interesting ad. If Nemanja Bjelica's been dropped, you could look at him, Iman Shumpert for that time. Also, maybe Frank Mason you could consider across that back-to-back. And the only team with a Tuesday, Saturday pseudo back-to-back. Now, that's a big gap. But remember, if you add someone for Tuesday, you can't use them Wednesday because of the amount of games. You can't use them Thursday because there are 0 games. And you can't use them Friday because there are 14 games. So you could get an addition there by adding a Wizards guy, whether that is Oubre or Satoransky or Jeff Green or Markieff Morris or Jason Smith or Yan Mihinmi or even Austin Rivers. Maybe using that or adding 2 of those guys with those acquisition limits might be useful. But of course, in a week like this, we've only got 3 days to really look at in terms of streaming plays. And maybe you can add someone on the Monday with only 9 games. That's going to be dependent on how your roster looks. It's not as important to maximize games played per acquisition because I think you're going to have acquisitions left over by the time you get to the end of the week, and you're going to be looking at streaming in the guys who do really help your team in those categories you need to get over the hump. Other players to look for this week whose schedules help them out, and they might be weekly lock players when you wouldn't normally consider that: Derek Favors, Etuan Moore, Jeremy Grant, Shelvin Mack, Jeremy Lin, Jordy Clarkson, Monty Morris, and Colin Sexton are some names that come to mind as players who could have some increased value, or it might be able to lock in as a weekly player when in most other circumstances they probably wouldn't quite get there. Let's transition this now into talking DFS, the perfect lineup. These are for the 4-game main slate, so not including the early game, the Memphis-Minnesota game. On DraftKings, Trey Burke had 39.25, Kelly Oubre Jr. had 37, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope 29, LeBron James, 68, Jusuf Nurkic 44.25, Lillard had 54.75, Fournier 35.5, and Kanter 50.75 for a total of 358.5, and that cost the full $50,000. On FanDuel, Lillard had 56.7, Trey Burke 40.6, Hardaway 45.4, and Caldwell Pope 28.8. LeBron had 72.8 and Oubre had 38.8, Aldridge 52.9, Yunus Jarepko 22, and Enes Kanter 47.3 for a total of 404.6, and that cost a cheap $58,900 dues. We've got nine games we're going to talk about for Monday. We're going to focus on DraftKings for today. The first game up is the Philadelphia 76ers hosting the Phoenix Suns. The Sixers are favored by 12, and the total is 222.5. Almost the Richie Beno. Will Bridges remain starting? McCall Bridges, he started the last two games with Trevor Ariza out. Now, Ariza is back, and I would have to imagine that Ariza moves back into that starting line. But with how Bridges has played, not only these last two games, but the whole season, he should be seeing minutes in the upper 20s. I would hope that Kokoschkov would go in that direction. The Sixers got that big win against the Hornets last game with Jimmy Butler hitting the game-winning three. Benny Simmons at 8,900, putting up numbers again with Butler there, so that's great. 54 points last game. I'm still not ready to look at him as a must roster DFS guy at this point, but has played well against Phoenix in the past, and I think 8,900 is a decent enough salary to consider him. Devin Booker at 7,700 has also done very well against Philadelphia. 52-point average the last three meetings against them. At 7,700, I think that's a pretty strong price. While you've got Markel Fultz, Isaiah Kanan, Landry Shamet, and Jamal Crawford as point guards, you can ignore. At shooting guard, JJ Redick, 5,300, just really thriving in this role, in this newly reimagined starting lineup. 5,300. Not quite a lock, but pretty bloody close to a lock to give you value back at that price. Really strong for cash. While Butler is down at 7,900 over on DraftKings. Now, he did have that game-winning block and three against the Hornets. Still only put up 31 points there, so I'm not ready to go back in him as a lock cash guy. But at 7,900, there is tremendous upside. 50-point upside at 7,900 is pretty good value, and it's hard to pass up in tournament situations. Furkan Korkmaz is listed as questionable with a back issue, so we'll see whether he plays or not. The small forwards, Babyneck Wilson Chandler at 3,500, came off the bench last game, as was a back-to-back. Whether he starts or not, I'm not really all that interested in him. While TJ Warren, Tony Warren Jr., 6,400. His lowest score in his last five games has been 35 points. That is really bloody good, and I'm happy. He just is fantastic at the moment, and it's really tough to say that you should be avoiding Warren. I think that he has some value. Ariza is a strong fade, as is Joshy Jackson. McCall Bridges, of course, at 4,000, had 32 points last game, averaging 17 over his last five in 23 minutes. It's all going to come down to how Kokoschkov uses him, and I don't have full confidence that it's going to be 25 minutes plus, so I think that he is a tournament type of guy, and that's about it. The big men, you've got Joel Embiid at 11,100, still dealing with this sore hand that I think coincidentally he hurt against Phoenix last season. It's not stopping him at all. He had 58 points last game. He's averaging 54 over his last five, so I really like him here. You've got Mike Muscala at 3,900, who played a lot of minutes, 37 against the Hornets. Not super into him, but DeAndre Ayton. We know that Ayton and Embiid have been going back and forth against each other all season. I think that could make Embiid go absolutely bananas here. As for Ayton at 6,500, his inability to block shots really limits his overall upside. He puts up okay numbers, but I'm not really feeling him as a great fantasy option. And if you believe in revenge games, Rashawn Holmes goes back to his former team. He is at 3,200, but yeah, the minutes just aren't going to be there for Holmesy, I don't believe anyway. Over on FanDuel, the Moose at 3,900. FanDuel, again, I can't stress this enough. FanDuel's pricing is so tight. I think it takes a lot of the skill out of creating lineups over there because the pricing is just so ludicrously tight. But it does change some value for guys. And I think Muscala at 3,900, I feel like he can get you that value pretty comfortably back, whereas other guys, there's a lot of stabs in the dark around it. Embiid at 11,500, I love. And Benny Simmons at 9,500, talked about him before. A 50-point performance from him is a possibility, even with Butler around, so that's good to see. So I do like him here. Butler at 8,500 doesn't come out too badly over on FanDuel as well. Well, Redick at 56 is relatively strong there also. Let's move on to the next game. We're looking Boston Celtics and Charlotte Hornets. The Celtics are favored by 1.5 and the total is 218. The Celtics got smacked by the Jazz in their last game. They'd be looking to get back on track. The Hornets, of course, lost in that overtime game to the 76ers. Let's talk point guards here. Kyrie is at 8,400. He has been putting up some big, big numbers. He has struggled against Charlotte, only a 29-point average, but a lot of that is to do with some injuries that have limited him. He has been on fire lately. I have zero issue with considering him a cash play. Rozier, Marcus Smart, of course, are not. As for Kemba, he is up to almost $10,000, 9,900. Fair enough, because he dropped 81 points against the Sixers, averaging 51 over his last five. The Celtics is a bad matchup for him. He averages 37 the last three times, which at almost 10 grand is not something I'm interested in. So I'm fading Kemba at that really extreme price tag. Nick Batum was putrid last game. He's averaging just 19 over the last five, so he is now down at 4,900. So that makes, for me, him a great contrarian type of guy. We've seen him have slumps before, then bounce back with 35, 40-point performances. His highest score this season is 35. That's a legit possibility, but only in tournaments. Well, Jez Lamb, with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist out, he's really been stepping it up. He had 41 against the Sixers, Lamb. He's at 5,100. Absolutely no worries with him. Jaylen Brown, lots of worries. Strong fade there for him. While Gordy Hayward at 5,900 really struggled in that game against the Jazz, but I'm happy to go in with Hayward here. More for tournaments, not for cash, but he looks a little bit better than he has all season. The wing players, small forward type guys, Marvin Williams. The minutes are there with Kidd-Gilchrist out. At 3,900, there is some 30-point upside, but of course that's far from a guarantee, and he's just as likely or more than likely to not get to that level. But he has got, you know, 7x, 8x type upside, and that makes him a GPP sort of a player. Jace Tatum at 6,000, the salary is okay, but he is struggling, and there are better options out there. While Miles Bridges is not doing enough, and Marcus Morris not interested there. The big men situation, Cody Zeller at 4,000. Zeller is getting you value almost every game. Now, the upside's not that high, but he is averaging over 22 points in his last five, over 25 in his last three, which at 4,000, you would absolutely take in a cash scenario. Now, Al Horford is a difficult matchup, but Zeller has played well against the Hornets, averaging 26 the last three times out against Boston. As for Horford at 6,000, much like Zeller, you're spending up 2,000 more, but he's a pretty rock-solid 5X type of a guy in a cash game scenario, just not sure his upside is really high enough. And then you've got Bainsey and Bill Hernan Gomez, who would be weird picks, well, I think, anyway. On FanDuel, Batum at 55, that same sort of boat, as is Gordy Hayward at 6,000. Marvin Williams at 41 with that tournament-type upside. And then you got Kyrie at 8,400, who comes in at a fairly strong level. And Kemba at 9,300, a much more palatable option on FanDuel than he is over on DraftKings, averaging 50 points over his last five. But it still is a relatively high price tag to try and deal with Kemba Walker over on FanDuel. The Cleveland Cavaliers and the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons are favored by 10 and the total is 211.5. It is the second highest spread listed behind the Sixers over the Suns. So there is an element of blowout risk in this game. Point guards, Colin Sexton still at 5,100. He is averaging 30 points over the last three. I feel pretty good about him getting to 5X value at that sort of a salary. Really like him for cash and tournaments. Then you got Langston Galloway, who I'm not interested in, nor with Ish Smith. Reggie Jackson at 55 is an upside guy, but give me Sexton every day of the week over him. While Clarkson at 5,200, I'd probably take Clarko over Reggie Jackson also. The shooting guard players, Reggie Bullock's at 4,000, not interested in the slightest, nor with Rocket Rodney Hood at 4,500. They're just not appealing to me in this situation. While David Nwaba at 35, he is. 23-point average over the last three, getting some minutes now. It's tough to rely upon him, but there can be some, you know, 7, 8X type upside with Nwaba, which is an interesting tournament type of a play. The wings here, Chetty Osmond's at 4,500, just doing absolutely nothing at the moment. He is a tournament guy, but not a strong option there. While Stan Johnson and Glenn Robinson, if I'm taking one of them, it's Stan, who's got a weirdly successful record against the Cavs, averaging 27 points over the last three games. That, to me, is my weird GPP low-value play of the day. With how he's been playing, with a record against the Cavs, for whatever reason, whether that was LeBron motivation, who knows, but the way that he's been playing, you're pretty successful in about three of the last four games. I think there's some tournament upside for Stan Johnson. I won't say that all that often either. At center, Larry Nance at 5,700. If he starts, then he smashes this, averaging 31 over the last three games. If they move Osman back into the starting lineup and put Nance to get to the cleanup minutes behind Tristan Thompson, then he'll struggle to get that value. So there is something there. We just have to wait to see how it goes. While Andre Drummond should absolutely pull the pants down to the Cavs here, 9,700, averaging 53 the last three times out against Tristan Thompson. I'm here for it. Whereas Thompson on the other side of things has struggled mightily. 5,500 for Tomo. That's not good for me. Blakey Griffin's at 10-1. You're going to get 40 out of Griffin, but is that enough at 10-1? I'm not certain it's the best play on the board. In fact, I know that it's not the best play on the board. There are other guys out there that I would prefer to roster over Blakey Griffin. On FanDuel, Reggie Jackson at 56. He's a more appealing option there than some of those other guys like Sexton, who's up to 6,000, or Clarko, who's up to 5,700. And Jackson then comes in at a better option going up against this Cavs backcourt defense, which is far from stout. Rocket Rodney Hood at 4,900 also has a little bit more tournament upside. Love Drummond at 10. Love Griffin at 9-4, in much stronger positions on FanDuel than what they are over on DraftKings. And the 6,500 for Tristan Thompson just feels extraordinarily high. The Utah Jazz and the Indiana Pacers, no spread or no total for this game because we don't know the status of Victor Oladipo, who did leave that last game with a knee injury. The Donovan Mitchell is at 7,300, really killed it against Boston, dropped 50 in that game, had a big game against the Sixers on some pretty inefficient shooting, but I like Mitchell here as another strong option. While ravishing Rick Rubio is at 5,700, he is okay there. I think there are better options around than Rick, but it's not a terrible matchup. Daz Collison and Corey Joseph, 49 for Collison, 39 for Joseph. If Oladipo is out, I think both of those guys could have safe floors and upside, which would push them into the tournament and cash game realm. While Oladipo at 9,300 with the bung knee against a Jazz team, which hopefully can provide some level of defense, I think he's a fade regardless of if he plays or not. 4,100 for Tyreke Evans. That is a real tournament play to me. Now, if Oladipo is out, I'd feel better about him in cash. But last game without Oladipo, he only put up 15 points in 24 minutes. I still think that he is worth looking at that sort of a salary. Jingle and Joe's at 5,400. The numbers haven't quite been there, but I like the salary coming back down for Ingles, maybe for tournament, but even then I'm not certain. While Bojan Bogdanović is in the middle of a hot streak, averaging 31 over his last three, meaning he's just as likely to put up 18 here. But if Oladipo is out, when we see one of these high usage guys go out, we see Bogdanović's usage go up, his free throw rate go up especially, and that can give him confidence. So at 4,600, if Oladipo is out, I think that Bogdanović is worth considering. The big man Derek Favors at 4,600, rock solid for cash, limited upside for tournaments. Miles Turner at 4,700, confusingly, he's played well against Gobert, 32 points in 33 minutes the last three times, but will he get that amount of playing time? My gut says no, but at 4,700, he doesn't actually need huge amounts if he's going to get you a point per minute. So there could be some value here in Miles Turner, just not high upside. Gobert at 7,000, love Gobert here. He has obliterated the Pacers with a 45-point average the last three times. He's been a little bit down recently, but I think that he can put up a big performance here. And then you've got Domantas Sabonis at 6,300, who has struggled against Utah. I think that price might be a marginally high one here for Domantas. I'm not super against it, but I also think that if you're going to use him, it's probably more cash than tournament. Just not sure his upside is really necessarily high enough to be a great tournament play. On FanDuel, it's really just Tyreke at that 4,700 mark with the hopes that Oladipo is out to boost his value up. Turner at 58, maybe, but that's pretty high. Jay Crowder at 46, I'm not really seeing too much to like there. And of course, the Collison-Joseph situation if Oladipo sits, along with Bogdanović at 4,700, which you could consider Bogdanović at 4,700 regardless of Oladipo status, but it does pump up if Vic is out. Gobert at 7,900 is not a bad play on FanDuel as well. The next game up for us to look at is the LA Clippers and the Atlanta Hawks. That is your tied for the second seed in the Western Conference, LA Clippers. The Clippers are favored by 7 points. The total is 228. Trae Young's minutes have been quite low recently. He's been bad. He can't hit shots. The Hawks are getting their asses kicked. And of course, the Baptist, John Collins, is back for Atlanta. Alex Poitras and the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince are both doubtful. Avery Bradley is questionable for the Clippers. Well, Justin Anderson is likely to make his season debut. Now, he might not necessarily ordinarily be in the rotation, but with Prince likely out, then he could step in and play a role, although I imagine Kevin Huerta will get the start. Young is down to 6,300. on DraftKings. He's averaging just 20 points the last three. I think his roster percentage will be very low, and that would be worth throwing him into a tournament. But at the moment, you can't rely on him for cash, whereas Jeremy Lin, I think you can. 4,200 for Lin, 28 average over the last three, 26 average over the last five, has done very well against the Clippers over his last few games, albeit in a ton of minutes, but averaging 40 points in 41 minutes is nice. At 4,200, I feel good about Jeremy Lin. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a couple of real rough ones in a row. At 5,300, there is still some upside there, especially if Bradley is out, as I expect. But still not happy to go in for cash there. While Lou Williams is up to 6,200, has done well against the Hawks, one of his former teams. He's averaging 33 the last five games so far this season, taking up that additional playmaking role with Avery Bradley out as well. Pat Beverly at 4,900, yeah, only consider that if Braddles is out. Huerta is at 3,300. He's a shooting guard eligible player. I think that he can get you 24, 25 points if Prince is out. So I like him mainly for tournaments, but still some cash value there. Bazemore at 57 is a very, very good price. He dropped 36 last game for the Hawks. I feel pretty okay about utilizing him as well. The Wings, the Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, 6,200. Rock solid for cash. Love that floor value for Gallinari. While Toby Harris is up at 7,800. His lowest score in his last five games has been 36 points. So that is a very, very good floor. He's giving you around 40 points most nights. And really, really strong stuff from Toby. DeAndre Bembry is a tournament guy with Prince out. The big men, you've got The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman at 4,000, who is stepping it up, but I'm not super into him here. You've got the Wizard Amari Spellman at 3,800, who could be a tournament guy, especially with Poitras likely out. Yes, the Baptist is back, but Spellman could go back to starting and playing 24 minutes and contributing in multiple categories. But I'm not super interested there. Well, the table, Montrezl Harrell, just crushing it every night. 6,600 for Montrez, averaging 37 over his last five. Pretty hard to go past him. While the Baptist, John Collins at 48, just think the minutes will be too low here as he begins his NBA season. Not keen on Alex Len or Marcin Gortat either. Over on FanDuel, I think Huerta, the Rooster, and Jeremy Lin all have strong cash value. The Wizard and Trae Young have some good tournament appeal, especially Spellman at 3,800. That is, yeah, if we find he's starting, or if they put Collins in there, whatever, but with Poitras likely out, it could really help Spellman's value. So something to pay attention to. I think 800, that sounds terrible. $8,000 for Toby Harris is not a bad salary, while the 6,400 for Kent Bazemore is not far off being useful, but it's not not a high priority one. The San Antonio Spurs and the New Orleans Pelicans, it's a back-to-back for the Spurs. The Pelicans are 7.5-point favorites, and the total is 225 points. I said, you know, they're not the same Spurs. They are coming off a victory against the Golden State Warriors. I don't know what sort of lineup they're going to run in this one. Will we see... How much will we see of Derek White? Will he be in that rotation? Will he be putting up solid numbers? It's really hard to get a full grasp on what the Spurs are going to do, unfortunately. All right, so let's look at some point guard value in this game. Alfred Payton is out with that fractured finger. Originally, he was listed as day-to-day, but now he is likely to be having surgery, so likely to miss 3 to 4 weeks would be my guess. It is on his off hand, so that's, you know, better news there, but it pushes Jrue Holiday more to point guard, boosts the value of Etuan Moore and Wes Johnson in this scenario. At point guard, Jrue is at 8,700 on DraftKings. He's giving you 40 almost every night. I think he is a relatively solid and strong cash play here, while Bryn Forbes at 41, maybe for tournaments, but I don't really feel like he's a high upside player. Mills and White, very tough to consider those players. Etuan Moore's at 5,000. I'd only be looking at Etuan for tournaments. He had those really two, you know, big, strong games in a row and then faded last game and only put up 20 points. So the absence of Payton does help a little bit. I'm not super into it. Well, 9,100 for DeMar DeRozan. If they are going to go with that Forbes starting lineup, I think that DeRozan at that price has some definite appeal. The wing players here, Gaze at 5,300. Now, I don't know if they're going to play him because it is a back-to-back. I think they will. But if he does play, I feel good about Rudy Gay. While Nick Mirotic at 7,100. I really, really like Mirotic here. I think there's a lot of value in him. Wes Johnson, not so keen on. The big men, love Tone Davis, 11,600. A Spurs team on a back-to-back. He's coming off two real-life 40-point games in a row. Anthony Davis is getting assists out the wazoo, averaging 65 over the last five games. I love Davis here, one of the best options on the entire slate of games. Julius Randle, the minutes have been way up for him recently. 6,800 for Randall is not the greatest price, but it's not terrible. While 8,000 for Aldridge, I'm a bit worried about this potentially being a blowout. And on the back of a back-to-back, the back end of a back-to-back, I could see Pop limiting the minutes of LaMarcus. So that might push me to fade him here. On FanDuel, I love Davis. Etuan Moore at 5,300 has some value. Forbesy at 3,600 has some tournament upside. I like DeRozan at 9,000. And Drew at 9,500 is probably pushing a little bit high there, old Drew Holiday over on FanDuel. Let's go on to the next game. We're looking at the Dallas Mavericks and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies also on a back-to-back here after taking down the Minnesota Timberwolves today. The Grizzlies are favored by 3.5, and the total is 200. Actually, they're favored by 3, and the total is 206 points. Point guard wise, Conley's at 7,200. Absolutely love Mick Conley here, putting up some very, very strong numbers in a matchup, which is a super positive one for him. And then you've got Luka Doncic at 6,600, who led the Mavs to that big victory against the Warriors, dropping 41 points. Really hard to look at Doncic and go, he won't get you 35. I feel pretty good about him doing that here. So I like both Conley and Doncic in this matchup. JJ Barea and Dwight Powell are both questionable. So if Barea misses, Dennis Smith Jr. at 5,000 becomes a very interesting tournament guy. He dropped 33 against the Warriors, which is fantastic value at 5,000. And if he pushes to 32 or 33 minutes if Barea is missing, then he should get that number pretty comfortably. As for Barea at 4,400, he'd be more a tournament guy, but even then, not really feeling that. Garrett Temple, or Shelvin Mack, actually, 4,200. Yeah, he's okay, but I'm not super into that. Not really into Garrett Temple either. Dorian Finney-Smith at 3,600. Wes Matthews is unlikely to play with his hamstring. So Finney-Smith at 3,600 should be a lock for 20 points and could be a 30-point guy. So that's some cash value as well as some tournament value. While the pencil Harrison Barnes with Matthews out, he has given you 34 points a game over the last three. And at 5,500, you cannot argue with that from Harrison Barnes. Really, really like that. Kyle Anderson at 4,600 doesn't score, but does contribute in other areas. It's still more of a tournament guy in case the points go in, but he has played very well against the Mavericks as a member of the Spurs also. Big men, we've got DeAndre Jordan at 6,400. Love that price has come down that much. It is a tough matchup against Gasol, but I think he can bounce back and have a 30-35 pointer here. And then Gasol at 76. The only thing that worries me is the back-to-back, but he has been just crushing it on a consistent basis, so I like him pretty considerably. Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr. at 5,800. I worry a little bit about what they're going to do with him. Foul trouble. Still a really 45-point upside tournament type of player, but not for cash. Jermichael Green and Dwight Powell, those guys, I don't really think are worth discussing too much. On FanDuel, I like Conley, Finney-Smith, and Gasol. DeAndre Jordan at 7,200, I think, has a level of appeal there. The same story with Dennis Smith, and the pencil Harrison Barnes is also in a pretty good spot over on FanDuel as well. Let's go to the Denver Nuggets and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks are favored by 5, and the total is 228 points here in this game. At point guard, Monty Morris is at 4,100, playing really well off the bench. I think he's got that 20-point floor value really there, but can push up to 25 or 30 points. I like Morris here quite a bit. Malcolm Brogdon at 4,700, not super interested there. Bledsoe at 6,900.
Giggity!
I think this game stays close. Bledsoe's averaging 40 over the last 5. I think that's not a bad price at 6,900 for Eric Bledsoe. While the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray at 6,700, I'll take Bledsoe over Murray at any day of the week. Murray has been way off at the moment. Shooting guards, Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
The shots are falling, 6,100, averaging 34 over the last 3. Fairly good price there for him. I think that's a really strong option. While Paddy Connaughton at 4,000 is your tournament guy with Dante DiVincenzo sidelined. Chrissy Middleton's at 7,400. He had 53 points last time out for Milwaukee. He is rock solid as well. Nothing wrong with rostering him, especially for cash. The other guys to look at here, Yanni at 11,300. Love it. Don't love it as much as Tone Davis, but still really strong spot for Adetokounmpo going up against this Nuggets team. And then some of the big men. Ersan Ilyasova's at 3,600. He is really struggling. I'm not interested there. Brookie Lopez at 52. Lopez has done well against the Nuggets before. We know the hot shooting's there. I think a 25-point floor feels pretty safe. So I like Lopez for cash. I like him for tournaments. While Nikola Jokic at 9,500 has obliterated the Bucks in the past, averaging 63 points the last 3 times against them. Even on games where he doesn't look locked in, he gets 50-55 points. So I think at 9,500, Jokic is a very strong option. Millsap, Plumlee, McCurr, I don't really see a huge amount there. Maybe Thon at 3,100 if Lopez struggles at all. McCurr can come in, hit a couple of threes, block three or four shots. That could lift his value up, but I don't think that that should be a high priority type of guy. On FanDuel, Monty and Yanni are two guys that I like. Connaughton is a tournament guy. Jokic and Lopez have that value. Bledsoe at 75 also looks okay, as does Middleton at 7,500. The last game of the day is the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Sacramento Kings. Russell Westbrook just had twins, so congratulations to you, Russ. He is doubtful, not because of the ankle, but because he had twins, so that's good news that he should be back next game. While Terry Ferguson is listed doubtful, listed as out as well. Now, interestingly, Alex Abrines mentioned that he was going to be right to play, but then the latest injury report came out saying he was out. So we're not sure where that goes, but MC Hamadou Diallo should be considered an option. Stop. Have a time. If, because he got the start last game with both Abrines and Ferguson out. Of course, the report out of Sacramento that the front office is at odds with Dave Yeager for not playing the rookies. Have they met Dave Yeager before? This is a guy that is giving all these minutes to Iman Shumpert. He's playing Kosta Koufos over Harry Giles, but did it last year with Zach Randolph and whatever bullshit was happening with that team. Do they not know who Yeager is? And I don't understand these coaches who are just, why is there so much disconnect between the front office? Hey, coach. This is a straightforward conversation. Coach, this is a development year. We want to see the young guys go out there and develop. If you lose some games because the young guys are going out there and playing, so be it. Okay, boss, great. Let's get the young guys in there. Not the front office. We want to develop guys. The coach, I want to win, because if I don't win, you'll fire me. Look, this is as easy a discussion as you could ever possibly have. If you lose, it's okay. We want to develop our young guys. Sweet. Thanks, bloody. All right, cool. Discussion over. How are these franchises that dysfunctional? This is as simple a situation as you could possibly have. We want to develop the young guys because they're not competitive now. Cool. Thanks. Let's do it. Man, so difficult. I swear to God, there are morons littered all throughout businesses all over the world. It makes no end. Yes, I'm not a part of the inner workings, and I don't know more than these guys, but this should be pretty straightforward. Yeager could very well get fired by this. Oh, man, and they started off so well. Sacramento, the Kangs. At point guard, De'Aaron Fox, 6,100. I absolutely love that price for Foxy. The matchup is not a great one against the Thunder, who have been shutting down point guards. I don't care. I'm all about this one here for Fox. While Dennis Schroeder is up to 8,100, which is getting a little bit hard to stomach. But it's not terrible. With Westbrook out, he's giving you 35 to 36 almost every night, at least that, with 45-point upside. So far from a terrible option. Frankie Mason, Felton, yeah. Shooting guards, Bogdan Bogdanovic is at $4,000. I would hope that he can push his playing time up in this game. He's already averaged 25 points per game in limited minutes, and at 4,000, that's plenty. So I like Bogdanovic here quite a bit, while Budrick Hield at 56, after a little bit of a dip, is averaging 32 over the last three. A big step forward over the last couple of games for Bud. MC Hamadou Diallo, 3,400, would be an upside-ish type of a player. On the wings, we've got Paulie George at 10,400. Without Westbrook, he's giving you 50 points without fail, really. His lowest score in his last five games is 50 points. So I like Paul George quite a bit here in this scenario. Jeremy Grant, Nemanja Bjelica. I like Grant at 49. I don't like Bjelica with how things are trending in Sacramento. The big man situation. Bagley's at 3,900. Last game after that Yahoo report, played 27 minutes and had 29 points. I think that is almost a must rosterable player, especially in cash at that's 3,900 price tag on DraftKings. Steve-O Adams at 7,500 is rock solid as well. While Cauley Stein at 58, I'm a little bit cautious on him, that maybe for tournaments, not super interested. And of course, nobody should be interested in Patrick Patterson. Sorry to you, Pat. On FanDuel, Grant and Fox at 54 and 78 have cash and tournament value. I like 5,100 for Bogdan. The 54 for Bagley takes a little bit of the edge away, but I still think you can consider using him. Schroeder at 75 also looks good, and Paul George at 10,000. And not a bad price to look at, again, considering that he is giving you 50 basically every time he goes out there. Let's just wrap today up by going through the studs and values. On DraftKings, my stud is Anthony Davis at 11.6, and my value play is Marvin Bagley at 3,900. On FanDuel, we're looking at Conley at 8,300, and my value play is Huerta at minimum salary. On Yahoo, Tone Davis, 57, as my stud player. My value is Monty Morris at minimum. And then on DraftStars, my stud is Antetokounmpo at 19,550. And my value pick is Huerta at 6-0-2-0. The best bet for Monday is the Celtics -1.5. Guys, if you do like this podcast, go and subscribe. It's the best way to make sure you never miss an episode. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, a 5-star rating would be excellent. And of course, you can watch it on YouTube. Go give a thumbs up, subscribe, hit the bell for notifications so you can watch the premiere when the shows go out as well. And leave a comment, interact with other fantasy basketball lovers from around the world. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Marcus Morris.